to introduce Greg Kramer, who is the founder of the Mecca? Founder of the Mecca Foundation, which is a Dhamma organization in the Hudson Valley in New York. He's a Vipassana teacher and invited the Venerable Ananda Maitreya to this country. So Greg will give a little introduction before Bhante gives his talk.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting us here on such a special night after so many months of hard work. And I certainly appreciate that. Venerable Ananda Maitreya is a highly respected teacher and scholar. He studied with many teachers himself and actually has been a monk since 1911. He's 94 years old now, and he is, well, you might say retired in that he's traveling the world teaching and translating, but he's no longer at his other posts, which were quite formidable, as a chairman of the Department of Buddhist Studies at the University of Sri Lanka and the vice chancellor of that university. He also was the chairman at the famous Sixth Council in 1953, and with good cause. He has a very deep understanding of the Dhamma and, of course, of the Pali language. And fortunately for us, his command of English is also very good. And on a recent stay in Paris for a few months, he said he was learning French. So his current work includes undertaking a new translation into English of the Tripitaka, and which is very fortunate because some of the earlier translations, the Pali Text Society translations, are in Old English and are very difficult. I don't know if you've tried to read any of them. But Bhante has excellent way of getting the meaning across. And it's our good fortune that he's doing that. And with some assistance that I'm very happy to be giving him, it hopefully will be going directly into the computer, which he is now learning. And it is all I can say beyond that in the way of introduction is that it's been a deep honor and pleasure for me to be able to learn from Bhante on and off over the last 7 years. And again, I'm very happy to be able to bring him here tonight.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Brothers and sisters, first of all, I must be thankful to you for inviting me to give you a talk, especially on meditation. And at the same time, I must be thankful to Mr. Kramer for taking me here. Well, I'll start. You are practicing meditation. Why? Why should we practice meditation? There must be a purpose for practice of meditation. Everybody expects and likes to attain to happiness. Our purpose is to attain to happiness, a perfect happiness, perfect peace. But so long as our mind is impure, or when there is possibility for passions to arise in our heart or mind, there is no perfect peace, there is no perfect happiness, because we don't know at which time the passions will arise in our heart, in our mind, and spoil it, and then consequently mislead us to do so many wrong deeds, crimes, or dirty actions, because there is the possibility for passions to rise in our heart or in our mind. So we have to purify our mind perfectly. When mind is purified, when mind is cleansed perfectly, then there is peace, there is happiness. Therefore, we want to remove, root out these mental depravities, kilesas, passions, mental impurities. To do that, we must understand the nature of passions. You know, greediness, anger, jealousy, and so many passions are there, so many mental depravities are there, which arise at some moments. So you must understand the levels of passions. There are three levels of passions. Now, at this moment, you feel your heart is pure, your mind is pure, very clean. But when you go out and move among people, after some days, if you are not mindful enough, you don't know at which time some passions may rise in your heart and tempt you to do some sort of mischief. But now you are very pure mentally. You feel that. But there is possibility for passions to rise within you and within me. So that is one level, that there is possibility for passions to rise in our heart. This possibility of passions rise is called in Pali anusaya. That is a dormant stage of passions, latent stage, or dormant, sleepy stage of passions. But so long as passions lie in the sleepy stage, or the possibility for passions rise up, we don't know at which time they may rise up. Sometimes when an occasion comes, if you are not mindful, passions may rise up in our heart. So, now we know there is a dormant stage of passions. Next to that, there is upsurging state of passion. Passions rise up in our mind. In our mind is a third stage, at which passions, when they rise up in our mind, they become very strong. So strong to make us do some mischief. That is the transgression stage of passions. We transgress natural rules of good conduct, good character, and we may do bad deeds. We may harm others. We may do some dishonest deeds, robbing and stealing, and sensual misconduct, telling lies, and there are so many bad deeds, unwholesome deeds, dirty deeds. This stage of passion is called transgression stage. But within some people's mind, though passions arise, they remain there, they don't do anything. But passions are burning there. They don't do anything. But within their heart, it is impure. It is very bad. Mentally, they are doing some bad deeds. Other people don't see that. Why is it? Because there is the possibility for passions to rise up in your heart. That, in other words, passions are there in latent or in dormant stage, in dormant level, passions are there. So there are three levels of passions. Dormant level, upsurging level, and transgression level. Three levels of passions. The worst is the transgression level, because we do bad deeds, evil deeds, when passion rises up to that strong. How do we overcome them? How should we remove them? How should we keep our mind free of all these passions? That's the question. The dormant level of passion is not easy to handle because it is so subtle. At the start, it is very difficult. Upsurging level of passions also, to some extent, is not so easy to handle in the beginning, at the start. But transgression level of passions is clear. When I tell a lie, I know, I feel I am telling a lie. If I do some harm to somebody, it is very clear to me that I am doing a bad deed. So, this transgression level can be handled at the start. What are we to do that? To overcome the transgression level. That means to stop doing evil deeds, first of all we must train ourselves. What are we to do? It is for this purpose that the Buddha has asked us to keep precepts. We have to build good conduct, sila. We have to keep silas, keep precepts. We have to build a good character. In character, we must be pure, First of all, the Lord Buddha said, the foundation, the basis of all good deeds is sila. Sila is the ground. Sila is the basis, the foundation of all good deeds. Without sila, you can't develop yourselves spiritually. Therefore, first of all, we must keep precepts. We must make ourselves morally good. There must be morality. We must be morally good. We must have morally good character with us. It is for that purpose we have to observe silas. Now, when you practice meditation, at the start, whether you verbally, by words, repeat the line of training, Sikkhapadas, saying Panantipata Viramani Sikkhapadami Samadhyami, or I abstain, I undertake the training to abstain from killing and so on. Whether you repeat verbally by words or simply, if you make determination, I must keep these silas, I must train myself according to this sila rules. You can do anyway. So, at the start, you have to observe these silas. You have to keep precepts. In this way, when you keep precepts, whenever an opportunity comes for passions to rise up and make you do some bad deed, at once you remember, I am observing some sila. I am keeping precepts. I should not break my precepts. I should not make impure my character. So, a person who keeps precepts, if he honestly and earnestly keeping precept, he feels, I am keeping precepts. I should not do any bad deed. I should not tell any bad word. So, when you keep precepts properly, you can control yourselves and you can avoid doing any bad deeds. You can keep yourselves from doing evil deeds, bad deeds. In this way, you can keep good character. You build your good character. So, when you do this, the transgression level of passions is suppressed. Even though you feel to transgress or to do some bad deed, immediately you remember, I am keeping precepts. I am bound to keep these precepts. Therefore, I should not do this. Because it would break my good character. I must keep my good conduct. I must be morally good. That is why I keep these precepts. So even when you practice this, if you keep precepts, you must be mindful. The Lord Buddha said, mindfulness is to be practiced in every activity. Sati sabbatthika. Mindfulness is useful in every activity. Every time, every moment, in every action, there must be mindfulness. If you keep precepts mindfully, whenever their temptation comes before you, And whenever you feel to be tempted by some external things, then as you are mindful, you feel, now this is a very bad thing, I must not be tempted, I must not do any bad thing. So, by keeping precepts, you overcome the transgression stage of passions. That is the purpose of keeping precepts. Now, even though you keep precepts, morally you are good, you are keeping precepts, but mentally sometimes you get angry, though you don't show it. Sometimes mentally you are full of sloth or torpor. Sometimes you feel you are greedy. Sometimes lustful thoughts may arise within you, though you don't show them to others. But outwardly, as you keep precepts, you are very good. You are good in conduct, but mentally you are impure now and then. So what are we to do to keep our mind from passions to rise and spoil it in this way? What is to be done? We must try to understand how passions arise within our heart. If we allow our minds to wander, to go here and there, to run after this object and that object, and if we are careless, if we are negligent, unmindful, then passions find opportunity to rise up. Our mind is scattered. It runs here and there. Then there are so many temptations. Therefore, we have to keep mind under control. That is why we have to practice samadhi, calmness of mind, through development of concentration. When you concentrate, when you practice one pointedness of mind, mind doesn't go out of the point. You have to choose some ideal, some good object. For example, suppose you think of the Buddha's virtues, Buddha's infinite kindness, infinite compassion, infinite mercy, Buddha's purity of heart. You concentrate, you think of it. Forgetting all other things, you think of the Buddha's virtues. Or you think of the value of the Dhamma, value of the path. There are so many ways of developing concentration. There are 40 methods, 40 kammatthanas. You have to select one of them. And then you develop your concentration. When you develop your concentration, then little by little your mind stops wandering. Then it is fixed on one point. When you practice breathing, you keep your mind or fix your mind on the place where the breath touches. Forgetting all other things, your mind is there. You fix your mind there. Then, as mind is concentrated there, not think of anything else. If you develop this concentration in this way, you are used to keep mind on one point. And there is one pointedness, but it is not the end. By means of this, such practices, there are many such practices. I mean, I told you there are 40 methods. This breathing is one method. To be mindful of the place where the breath touches, that is one method. There are 40 methods like that. So, by any method, you practice concentration, you say, then as your mind is fixed on such an object, no passions, no temptations can rise in your heart. Your mind is pure. Mind is calm always. From morning to evening, you can keep your mind in such a state and you can develop your mind to attain to higher state of what we call jhanas, rapturous trance, and passions are subjugated. Passions are suppressed, inhibited, they can't rise up because they don't find opportunity. Passions rise because your mind is fixed on some external object which tempts you. But now your mind is here, it is fixed on another object, some ideal object, Buddha's virtue or something like that, or the place where the breath touches. So, when you practice this concentration in this way, you can control your mind from wandering. Then, if you continue to do this, then your mind is pure. No passions arise. But if you attend to some other works and forget where you are, forget your situation, passions find opportunity. They rise up. Even though you practice concentration. If you practice concentration continually, you must be mindful and concerned. You must practice concentration. Therefore, even though you attain to jhanas, the higher mystic trances, when you wake up from such a state and turn your thoughts to other objects, passions might rise up within your heart. Therefore, developing concentration is not enough. But while you develop concentration, you can suppress passions. The upsurging state of passion is suppressed. It is subjugated, but there is possibility for passions to rise up. That latent state of passions, or dormant level of passion, passions are in dormant level. Therefore, now, as you morally you are good, and you have developed concentration to a great extent, and now you can handle the dormant level of passions. What are you to do for that? Why are there passions, there possibility for passions to rise up within us? Because we are ignorant of the nature of our life. We don't know really what we are. That is our ignorance, avidya, nations. Nations are ignorance, not proper understanding, non-realization. We have not realized exactly what we are. because of this non-realization, because of this absence of realization, passions, the dormant passions. Passions lie in dormant stage and they can rise up. Therefore, now is to be, now is the time for rooting out these passions. Now is the occasion, opportunity to root them about. We have to root out our ignorance. Ignorance as to what we really are. So, that is why we practice vipassana. Only by vipassana, not by anything else. Only by vipassana, we can root out our passions. We can root out our ignorance, our craving for worldly existence. The only way is the practice of vipassana. What is vipassana? We, passana. Passana means seeing or searching. We means in various ways. We have to see our life, examine our life, examine the nature of our life in various ways. So we have to examine it. We have to examine what we really are. I have to examine what I really am. I have to understand. You each, every individual should understand what you really are. Everybody. There is no other method. So how to do it? Now I call myself. What is this I? You have to understand what is this I. You, every person, think I. When you think I, then the idea comes mine. Mine. To me. So long as you have the belief in this I, this I-ness, there is possibility for any passions rise up. When somebody speaks some word against you, you feel, oh well, he's speaking ill of me. He's scolding me. He is disgracing me. Me. The idea me comes. Because you have the belief within you, belief in that I-ness, that egoism is there. You believe in that ego entity, I, thinking of I. So what is this I? You have to examine you have to understand this I. Where is this I? Now you know, you have a physical body. And also you have a mind. We have mind and body. Apart from mind and body, even though we make deep investigation, even though we make a deep and continual search, apart from mind and body, we don't find anything within us. We find physical body. We find there is a mind working, depending on this physical body. So, at the start, the mind is too subtle to handle, but body is easy to handle for the beginner of vipassana meditation. There are many methods to practice vipassana. According to Satipatthana Sutta, many methods. According to its commentary, there are 84,000 methods. because suitable to the temperament of people. Your temperament is different from mine, and the other person's temperament is different from yours and mine. Therefore, suitable to the temperament, there are so many methods. You have to select one method. But generally, this the common method is breathing examine. The method that starts with breathing and examining breath, and so on. So many methods are there. So, by any method, whatever method it may be, what we have to do is to understand what our body is. First of all, what is our body? We have to examine it. We know we have a skeleton within our body. Surrounding this skeleton, there are nerves, arteries, blood, flesh, and all so many things covered with the skin. That is our body. But every part of our body is nothing but a collection of matter, material units or atomic units. Suppose I examine my thumb. What is this thumb? We have to examine it. It is a collection of matter. There is softness, some parts hard, and there is motion, sometimes warm, sometimes it is cold. So there are such qualities, and it is a collection of matter units, atomic units. Every atomic unit can be divided. This thumb is a collection of matter units, material parts, collection of cells. So, if we examine this thumb, when we mentally analyze it, its parts, we see it is a collection of material units, and still we mentally try to reduce it. When we go on reducing every part of every matter units of this thumb, at last we come to nothing but vibrations or waves. Apart from these vibration waves, there is no thumb. It is all these waves, they are in a solid form, but they are actually waves and vibrations. There is no unchanging core or unchanging thing in this thumb. Every moment they are changing matter. Now I give an illustration. Some 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, as you got some others, about 70 years ago, you were children. You were small babies, children. Your body is a small body. But now your body is big. When does this change? When did this change take place? That small body has now changed to a very big one. When did this happen? You can't say. Why? Because every moment the parts of body are changing. Due to your food, due to climatic condition, and due to world energy that helps your body to grow up, and at the same time due to the material parts created by mind's force, by so many conditions, your body is growing and growing and growing. Every moment it occurs, it happens. There is no moment that it stops to work. Every moment, restlessly, this changing takes place. What is the meaning of changing? The first collection of matter units rise and fall, and immediately, without any gap, any breakage, immediately another collection of matter units rise in its place, and it is succeeded by another. And these material units are created by your food and climatic condition and so many things. So, because of so many conditions, these material parts are rising and vanishing, rising and falling every moment. This is called change in the body. If the rising ones are weaker, then we say we are getting weak, we are getting sick, or we are getting old. That is nothing but changing. Always the body is changing. So, not only thumb, the whole body is a collection of material units changing every moment. There is nothing that is not subject to change in the body. So, restlessly, this changing occurs. That famous Greek philosopher Heraclitus said, you can't put your finger twice into the same stream, same water, same river. Why? First, you touch the water and take out. Second time you touch, it is not the same water. That water has passed down. And another water comes to its place. Faster than that, faster than a stream of water, the material units of our body are rising and vanishing, rising and falling, always. Till our body dies and goes to decay, and at last come to some powder and dust. This changing of material units in body is occurring. It is happening every time, every moment it is there. Restlessly it happens. There is no rest to our body. We don't see it because our mind's eye has not opened to see it. Therefore we think we are very happy. Our body is very happy. We are enjoying pleasures with our body. But if we open our minds, we see our body is a restless thing. A drunkard, even though there is some horrible wound in his body, he doesn't feel it, because he has got intoxicated. So, we people in the world, worldly people, like mad people or intoxicated people, we don't see the exact nature of our body. This restless nature, this restlessness in our body, but actually, restlessly, every moment these matter units are rising and vanishing all over the bodies. This is impermanent, anicca nature. So we have to examine body in this way. Whether there is anything permanent, not subject to change in this body. Whether there is any rest in this, any cell or any part of our body, you have to examine it. No. It is always changing, restlessly changing. Therefore, every portion, every cell, every matter unit of the body is subject to change, anicca, impermanent. Always it is restless, it is dukkha. There is no unchanging core, unchanging entity that is anatta. So we have to examine our body, and through this examination, through this investigation, self-investigation, we have to understand our body, what our body is. It is our own investigation, not borrowed knowledge. When you practice this kind of vipassana meditation, you should not be a slave to any kind of theory. You have to forget even your book knowledge, because it is a borrowed knowledge. You have to examine yourself, for yourself. You have to investigate for yourself, and do understand, do see what it is. That is your realization. It is not borrowed knowledge. It is not believing a theory. So, Buddha asked to some people when they came and asked him, so many teachers come to our place and they teach different things, so we are perplexed. We are full of doubts, which is correct and which is not correct. Buddha said, don't believe merely because it is handed down by tradition. Don't believe merely because it is in your books, in your scriptures and so on, Buddha said. So, even we have to read Dhamma, the scriptures, but when you start practice of vipassana, you have to forget, you have to ignore all that. You have to make investigation for yourself. You have to dig deeper and deeper mentally your body and examine it. Then it is understanding by yourself. You are not borrowed to any book. So, you are not borrowing from any book. You are not slave to any belief, because you have seen every part of your body. If you practice sila and samadhi or concentration, and if you practice this self-examination or self-investigation, naturally your mind becomes more and more sensitive. As your mind becomes sensitive, mind begins to feel even a slight feeling. There, it mind is feeling it. Mind can catch it, can grasp it. Mind can notice it. Every happening in the body, mind knows. Nothing can happen unnoticed. Into such a state you have to develop your practice of vipassana, self-examination or self-investigation. Investigation by yourself. So when you practice this vipassana in this way, investigating the nature of your body, your knowledge of your body, your understanding of the nature of your body grows further and further till you are satisfied that you have understood what your body is. This is rupa vipassana. You understand rupa, you examine rupa, the physical side of your life, in every way, every possible way. Now nobody, when you come to that understanding, nobody can make you believe that there is something not subject to change in your body, something eternal in your body. Nobody can make you understand, because you have seen the exact nature of your body yourself. For yourself you have seen it, you have realized it. When you perfectly realize this nature, if anybody beats your body, beats you, you don't hurt your feelings, you don't care. You don't think he has beaten me, because there is no me in your body. This body is not I. I am not body. Body is not I. So, you don't think he has beaten me. Something happens between these changing states. The so-called person, it is not he according to your understanding. A collection of material states there. And this is also a collection of ever-changing material states. It strikes another materialist collection. So you don't think he has beaten me. You can keep your mind in peace. You can keep your mind unmoved, even on such occasions. Then, now you have understood how to practice vipassana over your physical body. Now let us come to the subtle side of life, that is your mind. What is mind? You have to understand what it is. You must be very keen and very sharp and very critical in this investigation. Suppose some visible form comes before your eye organ. Then eye sees it. Then seeing consciousness arises within your eye. That is what we mean by saying, I see. What is I? This I organ sees that, and within I organ, according to Buddhist philosophy, that sensation arises. That seeing, the action of seeing occurs. Meanwhile, suddenly a sound or voice touches your ear, then ear consciousness arises. Thinking about that sound arises. That ear consciousness or hearing consciousness not arises in your eye. Hearing consciousness depends on the sound and the ear. So hearing consciousness is not the seeing consciousness. Seeing consciousness arises due to the conditions, or arises because of I and the visible object. Meanwhile, you smell something, then smelling consciousness arises within your nose. That smelling consciousness, the smelling sensation, it is not the eye consciousness, it is nor ear consciousness. Meanwhile, something you taste, then tasting consciousness, tongue consciousness, thoughts about what you taste rise and vanish, rise and vanish continually for some moments. Meanwhile, something touches your body. Then tangible consciousness, touching consciousness, or understanding of that touching, that sensation about what has touched your body arises. Meanwhile, remember some past happenings. Then your inward mental consciousness arises depending on something happened some time ago or about some plan that you are going to do something, a plan of something. So inner consciousness, that is called mental consciousness, arises. So according to the moment, according to the object that you face or that comes before you, different types of consciousness, different types of thoughts, the mental states rise and vanish, rise and fall, rise and fall. There is a series of thoughts or actions of thinking or consciousnesses or mind units rise and fall, rise and fall, one after another without any interruption, uninterruptedly, continually, one thought rises after another, it is after that another, it is succeeded by another, it is followed by another. So there is a series of consciousnesses, series of thinkings, series of mind units flow incessantly. In this series of mental states, I mean mind units, there arise so many mental characteristics. Some occasions, in some mind unit, anger arises. On another occasion, in another mind unit, lust may arise. In another unit, devotion, devotional nature, or kindness may arise. So, depending on what comes before your senses, suitable to the occasion and objects that you face, that come before you, different types of mental states, mind units, or consciousnesses rise and vanish incessantly. So this is a flux of mental states, flow of mental states like a river. It is not one same thing. If we carefully examine, we don't find anything that is permanent in our mind. Some other people, followers of some religions, they say there is some ego, some spirit, some soul, some unchanging self within us, which does everything that according to their belief. Well, if there is such a thing, even though you become deaf, you must be able to hear it, because the most powerful soul or self or ego is there working. But what we call thought or consciousness or mind rises according to the occasion, depending on different objects. If your ear is deaf, you can't hear. If your eyes are blind, you can't see. If your nose organ is spoiled due to some disease, you can't smell. If your tongue is spoiled due to some disease, you can't taste properly. If your body, any part of your body is suffering from paralysis or such a disease, you don't feel the touching. So where is that power which you call soul or ego or self, which works? Every types of sensation and thoughts, depending on the sense organ and their objects. So all these things are conditioned. All conditioned things are subject to change. There is no permanent ego, entity, unchanging thing in mind. Some people say feeling, soul feels, but at this moment I feel happy, on another occasion I feel unhappy. That soul changes. Is it soul then? If it changes, it is subject to change. These are mere theories. Now, I tell you something. From there you see a robe, one thing, one solid thing called robe. Actually, is it so? Well, if you come, not only robe, in your clothes, if you carefully examine, if you scrutinize, and if you examine closely, you see threads lengthwise and breadthwise. According to certain order, these threads are joined. Suppose these threads are separated. Where is cloth? Where is robe? No robe. What has happened to the robe? So, what we call robe is a form, a shape formed by means of threads. Apart from threads, there is no robe. But suppose you separate each thread and pile up here. Is there robe now? No. What has happened to robe? But the threads are there, which have formed the robe. But there is no robe. When the threads are arranged according to a certain order and a certain form, we give a name, cloth. It is only a name for the shape, for the outward form. Apart from that, there is no robe. Likewise, the series of thoughts taken together, people say I or soul or self or some name they give, but actually there is no such thing but a changing series of mental states, mind units. Every mind unit is subject to change. So anicca, impermanent. Restlessly they are rising and vanishing. There is no rest. There is dukkha, unsatisfactory nature. There is no unchanging core ego entity. When you realize this nature of your mind properly, for yourself, not by means of believing what is given in a book, not by merely believing because Buddha has said it, no, by for yourself, you must see it, you must examine it, you must realize for yourself. So, by investigation, by examination, you have to examine your mind, and you will see the exact nature of what we call mind. Then you see no impermanent thing. You see the exact nature of anicca, of every thought movement, every mind unit, dukkha nature, unsatisfactory nature, because it is restlessly rising and vanishing. And anatta nature, no unchanging ego or entity in mind, because it is a stream of rising and vanishing states. When you perfectly realize this nature of mind as well as the body, you don't see any I, though you call I, where is this I? It is just a name for this changing material units and mental units, mind units. Now suppose there is a gentleman called John here. What is John? It is hair? Are his eyes? Or ears? Or his body? Or his mind? What is John? Just a name. Likewise, I, he, you, she are the names used by people depending on some outward form or something. That is something conventional. But from ultimate point of view, according to ultimate truth, paramattha, according to the exact nature of the thing, we don't see any eye. It is just a name for a state of continuing rising and vanishing states, mental and physical states. It is just a name. So, if you clearly see this fact, this truth, and realize it properly, if you go on practicing this examination, this investigation, at last you come to a certain state at which you never forget this fact. As you see it in the daytime, when the sky is very clear, when there is perfect light there, you see the things very clearly. Likewise, when you develop vipassana meditation over your body and mind, you come to a state to see your exact nature very clearly, very perfectly. Then you see no ego or I, or he or she, all are changing states, changing material and mental states, in different forms. Then no passions arise because you have understood the knowledge, the wisdom. The perfect knowledge has arisen within you. And with that knowledge, your thought process sees the exact nature. Wisdom has arisen. Ignorance is gone. It is rooted out. Because of wisdom, ignorance is removed, entirely removed, rooted out. The dormant passions are destroyed because they are based, they are grounded on ignorance. When ignorance is removed, no passions find an opportunity to remain there. So your dormant passions are now rooted out. Now you are perfect. When you come to this stage, we call you have attained to arahantship, the perfection, the stage of perfection. Buddha had attained to that stage. He became an arahant. His chief disciples, holy disciples, had attained to this stage, arahantship. They saw the things as they really are. All material states are mental states. All these things they have seen very clearly. So they are not moved by any type of temptations. They see what they really are. They are perfect. Now, when you come to this stage, this realization, you are not moved, you are not shaken by what happens in the world. You have no fear. You have no sorrow. Because you know all these things are the changing states. You have no, you don't think I. Though you speak conventionally, I, he, and so, but you have no belief that there is some unchanging I within you. Therefore, there is no possibility for any passion to rise up. Then you are perfect. You are mentally, in your thought process, every thought is full of peace. Where there is peace, there is happiness. Then you are perfect. You have, it is at this stage, as your mind is very pure and clean, your thought process is very clean and pure, then it sees the opposite side of this life, that is eternal bliss, nibbana. Summum bonum, the highest good, the perfect, pure side, the opposite side of this worldly nature, that perfect purity, that eternal nibbana, comes before such an open mind, I mean open thought process, pure thought process. When mind is pure, nibbana is there. You see nibbana, you experience nibbana mentally. There is mental peace. That is the purpose of practicing vipassana. Now, I have explained to you the three levels of passions. By sila, you keep your physical side under control. By practice of concentration, you keep your mind from temptations. By practice of vipassana, you open your mind's eye and you make perfect wisdom to rise within your heart and to see the nature of the world as it is. Your own nature, others' nature, you see mentally very clearly, then you come to perfection. You come to a state unmoved by whatever happens. Then there is bliss and happiness and eternal peace. This is the purpose of the practice of sila, samadhi and vipassana, the three stages of training. This is Buddhism. Now I have spoken to you about 1.5 hours. You have listened to me very attentively. Thank you very much. You may attain to perfect realization. That is my blessing. Now it is 9 o'clock. Yes.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.